The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, and it's a Monday. In fact, it's the last Monday, a holiday Monday of the month of May. Hope you had a good weekend. And it'll be a short work week for those of us still working in this country. The first issue tonight is Morgellons. For those of you who have been with us for a long time, and in fact, if you go to the center column at rents.com and scroll down, you'll find under the link that says More Data, right on the left, you'll see Morgellons. We have done a lot of coverage over the years on Morgellons. I'm not sure how many Morgellons special radio programs we've done. There are quite a number of them. I think close to 30. And yeah, it's 27. And they form actually a fascinating history of what we really know to a large degree about this disorder, this infestation. It's not an infection in the traditional sense. It's not a virus. It's not a bacteria. Not necessarily a mold, yeast, or fungus. It may be a combination of one or more of those. We don't know what it is. We don't know where it comes from officially and formally. And without question, the federal government does not want us to know. In all likelihood, they have a pretty damn good idea. We know that several years ago they announced a test with Kaiser Permanente and put up a couple $100,000, which was pocket change, and we laughed at that time. The official formal results of the test were never really released in any satisfactory mode. And now, a couple of 3 weeks ago, several news articles hit the mainstream media. News articles that were quite clearly the end of the formal testing period. And what those news articles said was, there is no such thing as Morgellons, and they went back to their old, insulting, really tragic label of delusions of parasitosis. There is nothing worse than telling someone who is grievously ill that it's all in their head. And that's what the government wants to continue. That's what it has been pushing for a long time. And without the people like my first two guests tonight, we would know very little about Morgellons. We would be essentially in the dark, and they have done more between them, especially Jan Smith. I think Jan Smith has done more research than probably anybody on the planet. If there is someone who's done more serious, hands-on, dedicated, nonstop research, I'd like to know who it is. So let's welcome first back our friend and Morgellons sufferer for, what, 17 years now or something like that, Jan Smith. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Jeff. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. How many years has it been?
Well, I think officially it's 15, but I think I could have had it for a couple of years beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
When I had the first real big outbreak with the lesions, it's been 15 years since that.
And it just for those who may be new to this, it came on sort of quickly as far as the formal appearance. You had lesions.
Yeah, I did. And one of the things that across the board many people feel is that the lesions will pop up at a time of extreme stress. And it can be stress from anything. You know, in my case, we had a fire and we moved. And, you know, I had felt, you know, miserable before that. But after I got to that point, there's something about the stress that it does something to your body that's different. And it really allows this stuff to come out. And a lot of people have felt that they weren't well before that, but it was a stress time, you know, whether it a divorce or whatever it was, or someone dying.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got this full-blown thing all at once.
Wow.
So I think it was latent before that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how long.
All right. Our second guest is Dr. Ed Spencer. Been on the program several times before over the year. Ed, a graduate of Yale University's Medical School, completed his neurology residency at the University of California, San Francisco, maintained a neurologic practice in Petaluma, California from 1972 until his retirement April 2010. He's a remarkably strong and courageous doctor, a real research healer. He became interested in investigating Morgellons back in 2006 after seeing a number of patients suffering from the disorder. He says, I'm going to quote now, Morgellons is a very real system of disorders involving the skin and other organs, and I'll throw in there parenthetically perhaps all organs, and is unequivocally not a mental or psychosomatic disorder. I have seen the skin lesions, I have seen the fibers, I have reviewed the disabling effects, especially brain fog. The fact that establishment medicine dismisses these patients speaks volumes about the incredible dysfunction of establishment medicine and the future and failure of many physicians. Ed, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to talk to you again, Jeff.
Thank you. When these stories came out, I guess a couple of weeks ago now, I can't honestly say I was surprised, but I certainly was angry. And Jan, I'm sure that is the general reaction of most people.
Yeah, it is. And I think that this one came from left field because nobody knew that Mayo Clinic was doing a study of any kind. We knew that Kaiser Permanente was, but to think that a place is doing a study, they don't have any funds to do this study, is kind of an odd thing. So I'm going to let Ed speak to that because he actually went into a journal of dermatology and he read up on, was it neurology? He read up on, anyway, what was going on with this,
right.
And what he can tell you what he thinks of this study.
Well, study in quotes, I guess. Tell us more, please.
Well, what I'm looking online at the Archives of Neurology, and it's online first. And I read this as abstract. I haven't been able to get the full article because I'm not a member. But it says, delusional infestation, including delusions of parasitosis. Results of histologic examination of skin biopsy and patient-provided skin specimens. Then they have the names. Archives of Dermatology, published online May 16, 2011. The objective, to review the results of skin biopsies and patient-provided specimens from patients whose assessment was consistent with delusional infestation, mm-hmm. including delusions of parasitosis,
mm-hmm.
design, retrospective medical record review. You notice I haven't said the word Morgellons once reading this thing. And to go on, it says, SETI Mayo Clinic, Rochester, Minnesota. Patients, the study population comprised all patients who were seen at the Mayo Clinic and had a diagnosis of delusional skin infestation, including delusions of parasitosis. Mm-hmm. They looked at people who were already diagnosed with delusional parasitosis, whether that was accurate or not, but those are the charts they pulled between 2001 and 2007. It's 2011, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And who underwent biopsies as part of their dermatological evaluation, who brought brought samples to their clinical consultations.
Uh-huh.
So, what this is a retrospective study. They're looking at charts. None of them less than, it would be 4 years old, and they already selected them with the diagnosis of delusional parasitosis.
Yes.
And they don't mention Morgellons in this abstract. And there's more to read here. Would you want me to read the whole thing?
Go ahead. How long is it about? We got just
It's a couple of, it's a paragraph.
Okay, go ahead.
A total of 108 patients met inclusion criteria for this study. 80 received biopsies, 80 had self-procured skin specimens, and 52 patients received biopsies and provided specimens. No biopsy specimen of 80 provided evidence to support skin infestation. The most common interpretation in the 80 biopsy specimens were dermatitis in 49 of 80, 61%,
mm-hmm.
excoriation, ulceration, or erosion in 38, 48%, and frequently assessed nonspecific dermal inflammation in 31%, Patient-provided specimens were most frequently assessed by the physician, generally a dermatologist evaluating the patient, although 20 of the 80 samples were submitted for pathological evaluation, so 20 out of 80. Of these 80 specimens, 13% contained insects. All but one of the insects were non-infestating varieties. 1% was a pubic louse. The remaining findings consisted of cutaneous debris, environmental detritus, or plant material. Conclusion, in patients with suspected delusional infestation, they suspected, but these are the charts they pulled that already carried the diagnosis. Neither skin biopsies nor examination of patients provided specimens, or patient-provided specimens provided objective evidence of skin infestation.
We have to do a break here, but that's enough. That's disgusting. They danced all around that. They did every step they could to avoid confronting reality. That's not medicine.
Nope.
Not science.
I don't think the doctors who signed off on this are probably really happy.
Oh, wow. Hold on. We'll be right back with Ed and Jan in just a couple minutes. Okay, let's get right back to our subject, the grievously debilitating and, we believe, fatal, at least in some cases, issue of Morgellons. It's clear the government does not want to confront this, admit to it, logically, scientifically, reasonably, appropriately investigate it. They're just not going to do it. We're talking about a study from the Mayo Clinic, which was a surprise. Again, nobody really knew about this. It was kept, obviously, quiet for reasons that are now very apparent. Ed was quoting some of the statistics from it. Let me just finish up and suggest that this is kind of the sum total of what it means. The authors write that the results of the study suggest that in cases of delusional infestation, for any of you listening who have Morgellons, I probably hear you swearing about now, delusional infestation, biopsies may not overturn the diagnosis. The study is important for patients. Patients frequently believe that physicians are dismissive of their concerns and are not examining their skin closely enough, and therefore patients request that more testing be performed. In conclusion, the authors note, quote, the majority of skin biopsy results did show dermatitis, raising the possibility that skin inflammation and its attendant tactile discomfort might be the trigger provoking delusional symptoms in susceptible individuals. Well, that's not beating around the bush much. They're calling people crazy, Jen. This is as insulting as it gets.
It goes even beyond that, because even though I've been pretty much discouraged about anything they're going to find in the future, I feel like this is a definite precursor for the CDC to come out with their statement, and this just sort of takes maybe they think it takes the sting out of the surprise that they're going to come up with. One of the other things I was going to ask, too, while Ed was on, I discussed earlier with him, because he is a physician, when you send a sample to a lab, what does that lab actually do with that sample? And I think, you know, it's important to realize that when a lab gets a sample and they don't even recognize the substance in the sample, they're not going to take it out to a Raman machine or a spectroscopy machine and run it through and go, oh, this is a such and such. I mean, they're looking for specifics and then they're done. So maybe
it doesn't fit in their textbook, a definition or a picture or something, they usually
I don't think everyone, I know that some people do have insects, and I wouldn't take that,
No, they do. That's
away.
True. There are issues
they
out there. Yeah.
But when I first started off with this, I had fibers. And fibers aren't insects, and they don't look anything like insects. They just look like, to somebody with an untrained eye or not looking for the type of fiber that I have, they would say, oh, it's lint. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how many contaminated samples a person in a lab will see over the course of time, but I'm sure that, you know, some samples must be contaminated.
But oh, sure.
But in general, I mean, I know that what I, over the course of trying to get treated in the early years, I had about 7 different punch biopsies. And probably all of those contained fibers. But all of those were discounted because those fibers didn't mean anything to those people.
Even though they were well down in the epidermis of your body. They weren't laying on the surface like
coming off your clothing. Yeah.
They're covered over with skin. They're in there. And you can pull them out. Jan was the first person to videotape them actually moving. That was a scary scene. I'll never forget that one.
Yeah, and, you know, if you go to YouTube now, there's many more people that have done the same over the course of time. And, I mean, YouTube is, you know, now a ton of things, but people are just kind of complacent, you know. And the other part about this disease is so horrific that they don't want to believe this could be true because it's too terrifying.
Well said. It is terrifying. Ed, when you were seeing patients when they first came into your office, what was your feeling about this? What you obviously scratching your head, but after a while you said, wait a minute, something's going on.
Well, I got interested in this about the same time I learned about what they like to call persistent contrails.
Chemtrails, uh-huh.
And you was wondering if there's a connection.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of went around trying to find someone interested among my medical colleagues. A dermatologist didn't want to have anything to do with it. Was actually angry. I tried to contact a Nobel Prize laureate at UC San Francisco. Didn't get anywhere there. I even talked to a group at a hospital. No interest at all among my medical colleagues. And I found that disturbing because I thought, you know, curiosity is something we're supposed to have in medicine, you know. And you don't expect everything to fall into the boxes. Actually, the way they're doing it now with a computer, everything is supposed to be in a box. And they give you the answer ahead of time.
And that's the truth.
But it was disturbing. And when you send something to a lab, you know, it usually goes with a diagnosis or what you're looking for. And people think, well, it goes to the lab, so they're really going to study it. Well, no. Because they're not going to have the equipment or the money or the knowledge or anything to look for advanced materials or something that's totally they've never seen before,
mm-hmm.
and so it has to be the specimen has to be looked at in a research setting. That's not a clinical lab.
Correct.
You know, these people are obviously very sick. They obviously have these skin lesions. They're terribly disabled.
Now, Ed, let me ask you a question. We're sliding into a break here, but these people came to you, and I want to make this clear. Morgellons is not just skin, okay? We don't know if it's the first stage or latter stages of this infestation or whatever it is, but it's only part of it. We believe, and Jan has had knee replacements, and in the middle of her knees that were removed were uncountable numbers of fibers. Correct, Jan?
Correct. And as I had a back surgery as well, and I never had a lesion on my back whatsoever. And when I was in the hospital, I was in white sheets in a white hospital gown with a dressing on it. When I took the dressing off, it was just loaded with all colors of fibers. It was actually way more than I usually see. Apparently, something had accumulated near the discs of my back, and when they did operate on it, it all came rolling out. So,
wow.
That was pretty horrifying.
That is. Did you get a photo of that dressing? That would have been something to have. Probably not.
Well, yeah, I did. And
you did?
I actually got photos of the fibers that were in it.
All right. Very good. Wow. Scary stuff. And when we come back, we'll talk about the other symptoms that you can't see, such as brain fog, which is almost a hallmark of this, internal organ damage. We'll mention autopsies, which are, you'd be surprised, very hard to come by with Morgellons victims. All right, back in just a couple. Okay, and let's get right back to our guests. We're going to skip the next break network. We're going to go right through the issue of where is Morgellons. We know it's on the skin. That's obvious to people who don't have it. Internal organs, we want to talk about that. We'll talk about brain fog. Ed's specialty, of course, is neurology. And then we want to talk about autopsies. But before I get to that, we have had on this program two people I want to very quickly profile for you. One was a man who could get nobody to help him, nobody to listen to him. He was in Southern California. He ended up at UCLA Medical Center in the dermatology department. The chairman of the dermatology department brought him in, took him into a room, I'm shortening the story, brought in all the intern resident dermatologists, about 10 or 15, he said. They had him strip. He had lesions all over his body. They walked around him. They walked up to him. They looked. No one would get near enough to touch him. They all left the room without saying a word, and the head of the dermatology department told him, "Sorry, can't help you. Good luck." That was the end of that. Mm-hmm. Number two we've had on the program, and this is our 28th at least Morgellon special, a nurse who worked up in the, and I think still does, in the Northwest at a hospital. She says a lot of staff have Morgellons. Why, we don't know. She said they wear long sleeves. She can tell. She can see a lesion here and there. She has it. She knows what to look for. So I guess before we get into the internal aspect, let me both ask both of you to respond to the question, how much is it spreading? And how many people might have it? We know it's on all seven continents. Jan, how is it continuing to spread?
Well, I would just say from the email that I get at my website, it seems to. Primarily the people that write to me are people that are desperate that have this and they want confirmation that they're not mentally ill because that's what they've already heard from the doctors they've been to.
All right. Ed, is it spreading?
I think so, but I don't really have any firm evidence.
Hard to come up with any when the government is fighting it like this.
Right, and they come out with these kind of Mayo Clinic things to confuse us. But I'm very concerned that this Mayo Clinic little announcement here is a precursor.
Jan nailed it. You've got it. Yes, we're going to get the CDC in a week or two or three. And they're going to say, sorry, nothing there, or something to that effect.
And then we're going to get really hit with the disorder. That's what I think.
Yep.
Because it has electronic properties. I mean, it's changed over the years. I'm not going to say over the years, but from patient to patient. It's not exactly the same thing sometimes. And they talk about electric shocks in their extremities, and Jan has noted she has evidence of, high-frequency signals emanating from people with Morgellons. Is that not true, Jan?
It sure is. It was done by a friend of mine that's got a couple of degrees in science and with his oscilloscopes, and he had three different oscilloscopes, and he also built a Faraday cage. Once he found that there was a signal, he wanted to know if it was coming in or going out. And with the Faraday cage, he did find that there is one going out. There may also be one coming in, but he knows that our body is putting out a signal to somebody somewhere.
Okay, this is not... Oh, my, is this amazing. Our body is putting out a signal. Is it from the fibers? Is it from other very strange pieces of something that Jan has found over the years? Is it that these are all collected into some kind of an aggregate transmitter receiver in the body? We don't know any of this, but go ahead, Jan.
Well, I do, because one of the first things I found was in a periodical called Advanced Materials, and what I found came under the name Communications Device. And one of the first things that I found, and I actually identified who made it, was a communications device. And it was fairly complex. It had several parts, and one part was actually metallic. Then it had what looked like the clear polymer kind of wires that go into fiber optic type wires. And then the other part that I found was an actual silicon piece that had a shape to it. There were two together in this array, and it was a communications array.
I remember seeing pictures of those.
Yeah, you have them on your site somewhere.
Yeah, they're bizarre.
All
right, Ed, let's talk about internal penetration of this infestation of something. And we don't know, folks. This could be off-planet. It could be some advanced DARPA project gotten loose, intentionally or otherwise. It could be something else. But all things are on the table at this point. Go ahead, Ed.
Well, I don't really know the extent of penetration inside. I think it is definitely there. I think Jan has proved it. And
oh, for sure.
And I'll just throw out a little story there. I'd met Jan. I knew she was going to have surgery. I'd looked at her stuff, and I called up her surgeon to say, you know, this is real. So I called the surgeon. I called him on Sunday, I guess, and he got him on the golf course, and he said, you know, you're from California. In the East, we don't make calls like this on Sunday. So that's just that's the way the problem goes. The way the mind is damaged by the various processes that keep us from helping each other and learning what's going on. My feeling or my opinion on this very strongly is that this is primarily an ethical problem. That people are making this. That this did not come from off planet. This is distorted minds doing this, and they're getting paid well to do it, and they don't get caught. They're not accountable, and it's a tremendous failure of ethics and of application of the golden rule. And I think that is a way to approach this problem, is to keep saying that to everyone. There is a possibility, I think, of going after this with affidavits, in which you do an affidavit, you put the supporting data on there, and then you send it to whoever you're inclined to send it to. And if it's unrefuted, it's considered true in a court of law. So that may be a way of getting some traction in all of this.
Jan, going back to the subject of autopsies and people who have died, some who we believe have died of complications of, let's just call it fiber infestation for fun,
right,
just for the moment. These fibers apparently can build up in arteries, they can build up in the brain, they can build up in any vital organ in the body, any organ system, anywhere, and create, obviously, systemic breakdown over time to the extent that the person dies. Now, we've lost people who we think have died of Morgellons. And explain to us, if you would, why we have no autopsy reports to look at that are done properly, thoroughly, and with real serious scientific lab work, and all the internal organs examined fully, and so on and so forth.
Well, you know, it seems to be an unfortunate series of accidents. You know, even though somebody may leave their body to be looked at by science, they might lose the body. That's been known to happen. And
really? They've actually lost a Morgellons victim's body?
Well, yeah, they accidentally got cremated first.
Ah, yes.
Uh-huh. And you know, and so it goes. I mean, I would be stupid to not be under the realization that there are so many people that are up looking at this disease, because with my opinion of what this really is, the government has a huge interest in not letting it get to be too much a word for the general public to just toss around like something common. They want to keep this in the dark as much as possible, and our community is so contained. And so anytime anything's going to happen, there's always seems to be some obstacle standing in the way of any of these things happening.
So the bottom line is, we really can't point to an autopsy of someone who has died either of Morgellons or died with Morgellons.
No, and, you know, I mean, and I hate to say it, but I think even if one of those autopsies were done, I don't even think that the results would be honest.
Easy to cover up, sure. No, didn't see that kidney full of all those red, blue, and green fibers. Didn't notice.
Yeah. But, you know, have heard rumors from people working in hospitals that those things occur, but when they do, they're told not to mention it.
Surgeons have to see things. I mean, your orthopedic surgeons. Tell our listeners that story about when you had your first knee replacement. And this is a very interesting story and very apropos to what we're discussing.
When I had the first knee replacement, I really didn't get the treatment that I got with the second one. Basically.
You went in as a regular patient and had a regular knee replacement, so to speak.
Yeah. I got to read my pathology report and it said fibrosis. What does that mean? I asked the doctor. He goes, oh, that's nothing.
So they actually wrote,
fibrosis
because it was the closest word they could come to that would sort of tie into what they were finding, which was an incredible number of these little fibers. Okay, that was the first surgery. You went back for the other knee, and what was your treatment like that time?
Well, this is because of Ed making this phone call to the surgeon. The second time, they put me in a clean room. Everybody had to wear white paper suits when they came in, and none of my trash could be disposed of it in the regular way. I had all of these special things going on, and I was in a room by myself, and everybody was wearing masks. Because of Ed, which was kind of nice. I guess they believed that I actually had something. Mm-hmm. And then when I had my back surgery a year and a half later, everything was back to square one again, and they put me right into the general population in a room with two other people.
Gee. Well, did in your talking, Ed, over the years with other people in medicine, did any other doctor ever come to you and say, well, what's this all about? Because they know you were involved with it. They knew that you were someone who was investigating Morgellons. Did anyone ever come up to you and ask for, hey, Ed, just come on, tell me the truth here?
No. In a word, no.
That's weird. So you'd describe the atmosphere as being fearful, reticent? How would you describe it? Because these are doctors, for goodness sake.
Well, it's a different dimension.
Yeah, okay.
You know, they just weren't there. I wasn't where they were.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to know where I was.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Precisely, yeah.
All right. Well, what we're doing here is looking at this issue of Morgellons here in the year 2011. I don't remember when our first program was, but I guess if we looked back over our shoulders collectively at where we were then and where we are now, we have a lot of visual and video data, an awful lot of anecdotal information. But, Jan, have we made a lot of progress? Now, what you mentioned earlier about signals being sent and received from the body of a Morgellons victim is fascinating. That's an incredible leap forward. But we did that, I'm speaking of the public, on our own.
Well, yeah, we did. And the sad part is, I don't know who, no aspersions to anyone in particular, but maybe everyone in general, who's doing anything, you know? The only people I can think of that have really done anything are myself and Clifford Carnicum, and I will certainly give him credit for that.
Right.
And he's still at it. I mean, he's doing it for the same reasons that I am. He's a good person, and it's the right thing to do. It's
correct.
Not about money, and it's not about trying to, you know, sell a bunch of people in a medical office ivermectin to take and charge them $500 a visit. So, you know, I mean, at this point, I've had some great things come up that could be research objects, but I have nowhere to send them.
Well, you know, this problem that we're facing here is not only with Morgellons. It's so much. Lyme disease is, in a sense, treated in the same way. Now we're all eating Fukushima, and I don't see anything about that. The medical people telling us how to guard against that. And then, you know, the Rife machine is, what, 76 years old? You can't find anything about that in medicine. So the whole system is sheathed in lies and ignorance, shrouded in lies and ignorance.
It's not only that, but it's complicit in the unnecessary deaths of hundreds of millions of people. Unnecessarily early deaths, shall we say.
Yeah,
I mean, what Royal Rife discovered and achieved in the 1930s is so unprecedented. And once in a while you'll see a story that some group somewhere is using electromedicine frequency energy medicine. And what they're doing is they're backing in ever so slightly to the entire Royal Raymond Rife paradigm of magnificent research and successes. But they're not embracing it fully. They won't talk about Rife. They won't acknowledge him at all. They're actually stealing little bits and pieces of his work. But again, it's very marginal and very infrequent.
Do you know of anyone treating Morgellons with Rife?
No, I'm not sure that it'll work because Rife, of course, was centered upon treating microbial issues. And we don't know if Morgellons is potentially microbial or if it's mechanical or if it's some hybrid between the two. Perhaps a frequency of some kind could be detrimental to it. That was a theory that was running around a number of years ago. But no one's been able to do anything in a laboratory with fibers, exposing them to umpteen thousands of different frequencies and combinations thereof to see if anything will happen. Now, if they are involved in sending and transmitting, and they are, or Jan wouldn't have presented that, we have at least something to consider here. Now, could a frequency again debilitate this syndrome? I don't know. But it's certainly something that needs and warrants and demands investigation. But the investigation is not going to be done by them, at least not in a circumstance that we'll be able to be privy to what they find or don't find. It'll all be done behind closed doors. I would suggest, Jan, that they know one hell of a lot more than we'll ever know they know.
Oh, well, yeah, of course. And as a matter of fact, I wanted to mention before the time ran out, a friend of mine called the CDC 2 days ago. She has a really terrible case of Morgellons. And she is very distraught. She was very much waiting to hear some kind of encouraging news because, you know, it's really tough for her to stay out of being, like, totally depressed because she's so debilitated with this that, I mean, she's literally, you know, crippled with this and she can't really leave her house or anything. I mean, it's just a terrible state of being. So she talked to somebody at the CDC and they gave her somebody else to talk to and then somebody else to talk to. And the upshot of it all was, is yes, they said their study is done, but now they're saying that they have to have it published and peer-reviewed before anyone can publish it. If they tell anyone the results before it's published, and it invalidates it, on and on and on. And so she said, how long will that take? And they said, oh, it could take a couple of years. So there's another couple of years of stalling, doing nothing. But in the meanwhile, she practically is weeping on the phone, and she's saying, you know, what am I going to do? I have a 14-month-old grandchild, and I'm afraid to touch him. And, you know, here's the towel. The woman said, oh, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that's a pretty good precursor to what the findings are going to be.
Right.
You know, your delusions can't hurt you or your grandchild.
Right, of course. Well,
so that's just not a good feeling.
Yeah, that makes sense when you plunk down a whole $235,000. How many years has it been now that the study was commissioned?
Oh, gosh.
Six?
It 2008 or something like that, or six?
Oh,
I
think it's at least five.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was. And, you know, the whole thing was unethical to begin with because Kaiser Permanente used only their own patients, just like Mayo. And these people all were already diagnosed as delusional before they took them in. And one thing that's very curious about this whole study is, as much as this community usually gets together and talks, nobody knows anybody that's been a part of this study. Nobody has ever come forth and said, you know, this was this is what was asked of me in the study, and this was what was done. So everything is totally behind the curtain. Nobody knows what was really done at that study. And at Mayo, it was a bunch of, you know, punch biopsies taken to a clinic where they had no concept of how to define what the material was.
Right.
So I mean, it's all crap.
Has anyone ever successfully taken a fiber down to its constituent elements in a lab?
Well, yeah, I think at one point one of the fibers that I had was done by Raman testing down at SUNY. It was a guy named Mark Dara that was working on this for a while, and he had an in at the lab down there.
Mm-hmm.
And the modal fibers that I have, the ones that are sort of worm-like, mm-hmm. that I call sugar snakes on my website, he said were succinosaccharides, which is a kind of oligosaccharide. So, you know, here's a strand made out of polysaccharides, which is like a sugar, and it moves around. So, you know, that's going to be a hybrid
of... Not supposed to happen.
No, that's going to be a hybrid of something. You know, I mean, that's a created thing.
Whether it was created here, again, on this planet, or off, we don't know. Just had a note from Cliff Mickelson, who will be on the program in a week or two. He said, I did the Rife protocol and didn't have any results. I suspect you are right.
Yeah.
It is a hybrid type of creation.
Right. So. Yeah. Jan, do you know anything about it being in all of us? Conicon and I guess Gwen Scott were talking about that probably we all have it.
Yeah, they were. And Gwen was also on Jeff's show at one point, and she had made statements before that she had actually met a person that helped design Morgellons. And, I mean, she, you know, she stated that on the air. So.
Yeah, I'd sure like to see some data on that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying she's not telling the truth, but it's, I don't know.
It's probably one of those things, if he did come forward and talk to her, that he has to be protected. So it's
kind of
one of those gray areas.
Right. Right.
But I can tell you when the government comes on my website, and, you know, I can tell when they do. I've been visited by Homeland Security, the CDC.
Sure. I'm sure they're all over it.
The Army and all that. They always go to look at that item about the man who designed Morgellons disease. I can see which articles they've been to, and that's the biggie.
Very interesting.
That kind of makes it real, doesn't it?
Well, it doesn't necessarily make it real, but maybe they're as curious as we are. We don't know. It's hard to read that. Who is this guy, and does he know something we don't? That's a possibility. There are so many different possibilities out here. That's what's frustrating.
I mean, and the technology that's out there today is so much more advanced than any of us could even dream.
Decades.
Yeah.
For sure. And at the rate of acknowledged explosions in technology, you can just let your imagination pretty well run wild.
Mm.
I mean, they are way advanced, way out there. So,
Okay,
people that have it, has anyone come up with anything that can give them at least symptomatic relief, Jan, of the feeling? It's tough to get rid of a feeling when there's something actually moving in your skin, though.
Well, you know, that varies from person to person because I know that I went to Dartmouth at one point and they were trying to say, you know, you itch. And I said, I never said I itch and I don't itch. For some reason, I have this and I don't itch. When I get a lesion, they don't really itch. They just hurt, which is a whole different thing than itching.
Yeah.
They went on the automatic assumption that they had to itch because I had to scratch, and that wasn't the case. So, you know, there's so many people that are trying so many different things, and it really seems to be trial and error. And I can't recommend one specific thing that fits all for anybody. But I will say that sugar in people's diet seems to exacerbate it a lot.
Well, that's an interesting statement because of the polysaccharide.
Yes, it is, and that seems to be true. And I mean, if there are polysaccharide strands in our body, what bearing would that have on something like diabetes?
Yeah, that doesn't mean that all the fibers are polysaccharides.
No, only those sugar snake things that are the kind of banded, wormy-looking ones. Now, the other ones were found out to be high-density polyethylene and silicon.
Right.
I mean, some of the things have been tested, but unfortunately, you know, somebody comes in and they can do one or two things. The fellow that was working down at SUNY, as soon as he did the testing on these various things, and they found out that he was doing that, they told him he couldn't use the lab anymore, and that was the end of his stint there.
No coincidences, folks. Ed Spencer, thank you for everything you've done. Thanks for being here tonight. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks. Good night.
Okay. Good night, Ed. And Jan, thank you. You've just been a hero or heroine. And this whole thing would be probably still in the garage if it weren't for your work. And I urge all of you to click on Jan's name, go to her website, and look and see what Morgellons is all about. Thanks, Jan.
Well, let me thank you, too, Jeff, because of anybody on the Internet, you're the person that actually has followed us through the journey and has helped the most.
Well,
so thank you.
You're welcome. I'm glad to do it. All right.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Night. All right, there it is, your update on Morgellons. We'll watch this, and the CDC official Kaiser Permanente study will be out soon. You can count on that, and we can tell you right now what the results are going to be. I think you can fill in the blanks. Be right back.